I'm a gadget guy, and so I like my smartphone, and I use the computer a lot, and I do Twitter, and I have a lot of time-saving things that I incorporate into my day-to-day life. But I'm wondering, does all of this really help? Does it give me any more time? Or do these things steal time and add to my to-do list? I'm John Fuller, and this is Focus on the Family, and our host is Dr. Julie Slattery. And Julie, we haven't talked about this particular subject that we'll get to here in just a moment for a while, and it's because we've just been too busy. You know, I mean, things are moving at light speed, and it's a blur, and we've probably talked about being busy for a while, but it's good to address it today.
John, I couldn't agree more. We certainly are busy here at Focus on the Family, but our personal lives are busy too. This is really the first time being here at Focus that I've had a regular job, worked outside the home, and being a working mom with three kids, I feel like I don't have a minute to spare during the day. And some of the things that get cut out because of that are the things that I really need in terms of connecting with the Lord, connecting with other people, serving other people. And I need a reminder to get back to those things.
Well, it's so easy to try to cram more and more into what we're doing in life. And I think a lot of us wear that badge of busyness. We think that that's some big honor. And I've tried to shy away from responding to people who ask how it's going to say busy. I mean, everybody's busy.
Yeah.
But we have a message today that addresses that. And it's not a guilt-inducing message. It really isn't. But I think it is one that every busy mom and dad, husband and wife out there, even singles who just are doing way too much, can benefit from hearing, because there's a message in here that just says, slow down.
And I hope our listeners aren't thinking right now, I don't have time to listen to this.
That would be a mistake now, wouldn't it?
It would.
Let me just assure you as a listener that this will be time well spent, and it might help you pull out of the fast lane, if you will. This presentation was delivered by Pastor John Ortberg. He's a well-known speaker and author, and also pastor at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church in Menlo Park, California. And he gave this message while he was actually a pastor at Willow Creek Community Church in the Chicago area. Pastor Ortberg and his wife have three children, and so he knows a little bit about being busy. So with that perspective, let's go ahead and hear from Pastor John Ortberg on today's Focus on the Family.
Anybody here but me notice that the pace of life seems to be accelerating, that what it takes to keep all the plates spinning in your day seems to be getting faster and faster and faster? 1967, expert testimony was given to a committee of the United States Senate. And they said that technology, labor-saving, time-saving technology, is going to change the way that Americans work. That within 20 years, people would be working 32 weeks a year on average, or they would be working 22 hours a week on average, or they would retire by the time they were about 40 years old, because we would be saving all of this time through all of our technology and so on. They said to the United States Senate that in 20 years, the number one challenge Americans would face with regard to time was what to do with all of their excess time. About that same time, a new kind of restaurant became very popular in American culture. A restaurant that for the first time in human history sold food not on the basis of its quality, not on the basis even of its price, but on the basis of the speed with which it is served. And we coined a phrase for those kind of restaurants. We call them fast food. Fast food, not good food, not even cheap food. Just fast. But even with fast food restaurants, you know, you still had to park the car and get out of the car and walk all the way inside and order the food and sit down someplace and then throw the stuff away. And all of that took time. So we invented drive-through lanes, so that families could eat in vans as God intended them to. And the beautiful thing about this arrangement is when you're in the van and you haven't got time to go to the fast food restaurant, the kids can just scrounge around in the cracks underneath the seats, you know, for French fries and gummy bears and... I've seen your vans. Don't tell me you don't do that kind of thing. We live in a world in which we will pay anybody who can help us move faster. I know of one woman who's a personal shopper. Her job is to be a personal shopper. She's with Neiman Marcus, and one of the people she works for is an executive, a female executive. This executive does not have time to do her own shopping, so she has this personal shopper. Personal shopper's job is to keep track of Christmas, birthdays, anniversaries of important people in the executive's life. She keeps the calendar with their dates on it. She picks out the gifts for the executive, for the executive's friends. She wraps the gifts. She sends them over to the person, to the executive's house. She reminds the executive so that the executive can personally give out the gifts. And this executive spends, she says, more than $200,000 a year on gifts. But no time. Although, frankly, if I'm on her list, I don't really care about, you know, for $200,000, she can keep her time. It's okay. I want to ask you this morning to consider the possibility that your greatest need in life might not be for someone to come along and say, we can help you move faster. Guy comes home from work every day, and he always brings with him his briefcase. And his son notices this day after day. So finally, his son says to his dad, Dad, how come you bring your briefcase home every day? And the dad says, well, son, it's because I can't get all my work done during the day at the office. And his son says, well, Dad, can't they put you in a slower group? I want to invite you this morning to do a radical thing, to consider the possibility that maybe you need to get put in a slower group. Maybe. Jesus is talking to people who are tempted to just throw their life away on stuff that doesn't matter and won't last. And so in typical fashion, he tells the story. It's a story about a guy who was a busy guy. He was committed and he was willing to do whatever it would take, and it would take everything. So he finds himself, this guy who's in agribusiness, consumed by his work. He's an entrepreneur, puts in 12, 14-hour days, works weekends, joins professional organizations and boards of directors to expand his contacts. And even when he's not working, he finds his mind drifting towards work, so that work becomes not just his occupation, but his preoccupation. His wife often tries to slow him down, to remind him that he's got a family, and vaguely he's aware of the fact that his kids are growing up and he's missing it, and from time to time they complain about books they want him to read or games of catch they want to play, but eventually, after enough books not read and games not played, they stop complaining because they stop expecting. And he says to himself that he'll become more available to the important people of his life in 6 months or so when things settle down. One of his favorite phrases, when things settle down. And although he's a very bright guy, this man in Jesus' story, he never seems to notice the fact that things never settle down. Anyway, he says to himself when he feels guilty, I'm doing it all for them. He woke up once at 1 o'clock in the morning. He feels this twinge in his chest, and his wife makes an appointment with the doctors. They tell him he's actually had a slight heart attack. They warn him all the symptoms are there, elevated blood pressure, cholesterol levels, and so on, and he's got to make some changes in his life. And for a while, he does. One day, the comptroller of his company comes to see him and tells him that, you're not going to believe this, but business is booming such that we can barely keep up with it. We're on the brink of a miracle. This is our chance to strike the mother lode. And if we catch this wave, we'll be set for life. But it's going to take major changes. We've got inventory headaches like you wouldn't believe, and demand is outstripping supply, and our software is outdated. And if we don't overhaul this whole company top to bottom, it'll be a disaster. Now, from that moment on, this guy is like a man consumed. And that night he goes home to his wife and he's all excited and he says, you know what this means, don't you? Once I get through with this project, we can relax. Our future will be assured. We'll be set for life because, he says to her, I know the market. I've covered every base. I've anticipated every contingency. We will finally have financial security. Be able to take those vacations you've always wanted to be taking and so on. But she'd heard that song before, and she'd learned not to get her hopes up. 11 o'clock that night, she said to him, I'm going to go to bed. You want to come up with me? And he said, I'll be there in a few minutes. I got a little more work that I want to do, but you go ahead and I'll be there in a few minutes. 3 o'clock in the morning, she wakes up and she's alone in bed. He's still not there. And she says to herself, this is ridiculous. She goes downstairs to drag him up. And he's sitting still at the table in front of the terminal, his head resting on the table. And she says to herself, it's like being married to a child. He would rather fall asleep down here than come up and go to bed. And she touches him on the shoulder to wake him up, to bring him upstairs. But he doesn't respond. And his skin is cold to her touch. And she goes to the phone and she dials 911. She has this panicky feeling in the pit of her stomach. But by the time the paramedics get there and check him out, they tell her that he had had a massive heart attack and he's been dead for hours. His death is a major story in the financial community. His obituary is written up in Business Weekly and Forbes and the Wall Street Journal. And it's too bad he was dead, because he would have loved to have read what they wrote about him. And then they have this memorial service for him. And because of his prominence, the whole community comes to it. And then they all got together and they had a memorial constructed for him. And they wrote inspiring words on it. Words that they would choose to try to summarize his life. Entrepreneur, innovator, leader, visionary, pillar, success. And they buried him. And they put up the memorial. And then they all went home. But then when it was dark, and there was no one around to observe, then, unseen, unheard, came the angel of God to this cemetery and made his way through all of the graves to the grave of this man. And there traced with a finger the single word that God chose to summarize the meaning of this man's life. You know what the word was? Fool. You fool, God said. Now you have to ask yourself, why did Jesus use that such strong language? That's a strong word. Well, what I want to suggest for you to consider is that Jesus here is not engaged in name calling, that he's making a tragically accurate diagnosis. That for all of this man's entrepreneurial acumen, for all of his ability to run cost-benefits analyses and cash flow projections, there's one scenario that he had forgotten to account for in his forecast. You know what it was? It was death. He forgot to consider the possibility that somewhere along the line, he might die. And God stands amazed at the folly of a human being who painstakingly prepares for every contingency, covers the bases of every eventuality, however unlikely, and forgets the one inevitable certainty that stares all of us in the face from the moment that we're born, which is, we're gonna die. He neglected to plan for the most obvious and predictable event of human existence. So what other word, Jesus asks, can you use to describe behavior as irrational as that? So busy building up his little kingdom, he had no time for the kingdom of God. So busy making a living that he didn't have time to make a life. Two great illusions prop up the lives of rich fools like this guy and like a lot of us. One of them is contained in this little phrase, when things settle down. The illusion is that someday life will slow down and there will be time to get around to the things that are important. Listen, friends, do you know when things will settle down? When you die. Things will settle way down. You know, when they put you in the ground. But until that day comes, it's not likely that things are going to change in your life so that all kinds of time becomes available for you to get around to important things. Things are not going to settle down. You may want to chant that one a few times to yourself. Things are not going to settle down. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. Second illusion that props up the lives of rich fools. And it's this, that someday more is going to be enough. that someday more is going to be enough. This guy kept thinking, you know, if I just get more, bigger barns. The Bible says an interesting thing about contentment. It says that contentment is a learned skill. It's an attitude. In other words, it's not the case that eventually, someday, I'm going to have enough stuff so that I will be content. If I'm ever going to be content, I must learn to be content in what I'm living in right now. I don't know if any of you read the cartoon strip Peanuts, Charlie Brown, but in one of them, Snoopy sitting on his doghouse. It's Thanksgiving, and Snoopy is upset because Charlie Brown and his family are celebrating Thanksgiving, the huge turkey dinner, and Snoopy is stuck on the doghouse with dog food. And then he reflects on this a little bit, and he says to himself, but it could be worse. I could have been born a turkey. When you leave here and get in your car in the parking lot, you're going to be tempted to think, you know, if I had somebody else's car that I'm looking at out here, bigger car, nicer car, newer car, more expensive car, then I would be content. But today at least, you're not going to think that, because today, when you get into your car, you're going to say to yourself with great passion, with great passion, it could be worse. When you drive to wherever it is you live, your apartment, your house, wherever it is, you're going to get to the door. When you put your hand on the doorknob, you're going to be tempted to think about somebody else's home. You're going to be tempted to think, you know, if I lived in another place that was bigger, nicer, newer, more expensive, then I would be content. Then I would have enough. But today, at least, you're not going to do that. Today, when you walk through the door, you're going to say to yourself with great passion, could be worse. Tomorrow morning, when you wake up and you roll over and you look at your spouse, you're going to say, no, don't do it. Don't do it. It could be worse. I want to be very careful about saying this. I am not saying that to be effective or successful in business is a bad thing. Please hear me on that. It is a good thing. It can be a wonderful calling and enrich the lives of many, many people. But there is a lesson that people in our society have just got to learn. You see, all of this rushing and accumulating that our lives become oriented around involve a form of denial, Jesus is saying. And the fundamental reality that we all deny is that we're going to die. There is a simple two-word question that people tend not to ask. And the question is, then what? See, that's the question that the guy in Jesus' story never asked. When I finally have enough, when my barn is finally full, when I am financially secure, then what? You have to ask yourself, when you finally get the ultimate promotion, when you've made the ultimate purchase, when you've got the ultimate home, when you've stored up financial security, when you have climbed the ladder of success to the highest rung that it can be climbed, and the thrill wears off, and it will wear off, you got to ask yourself, then what? What do you do with a cold marriage, or one that has failed altogether, or with children that learned early on that they're not as important as a briefcase and a meeting and a barn full of stuff? What do you do with people who should be your close friends who don't even know you, not really? What do you do when you discover that your life has had no vision and no meaning? How important will all that stuff be then? Don't you know, God asks, how quickly life passes? Don't you understand that it all goes back in the box? And every once in a while, something happens that pierces all of our denial and defenses. When I started studying to get involved in ministry, the person who mentored me in speaking is not only about the best speaker that I've ever heard, he's one of the most gracious and humble people that I have ever known. I mean, if I had to come up with a short list of people who to me are about as close to Jesus as anybody that I know, he'd be one of those people for me. So he is not only my mentor. Over the years, I was very fortunate in our being able to become good friends. And this summer, when we were thinking about leaving Southern California and coming to Chicago, because that was such a big move and it involved, you know, distance and winter and a lot of things like that, I got together with him to talk about the move. And then this unique thing happened when we were together. A time arose when it became possible for the two of us to talk about how much we meant in each other's lives. And we'd felt that for some time, but this was a chance to express it that we'd never had before, and to see him for me and me for him, the kind of love that we had for each other. I mentioned this because I got a phone call the week before this week that he has been diagnosed with a terminal disease. And the prognosis is that he will live somewhere between 2 months and a year. And I started thinking immediately, what can I do? What can I do that will help? And then, of course, you know, the thought came back, in this situation, really, nothing. I mean, you know, I can call and write and get together and do what I can, but ultimately now, my good friend is facing a moment that every one of us will one day face. Ultimately, see, the question is, then what? My friend is one of the most gifted and educated and well-connected people that I know, and he has used none of this for himself. He never became rich, although he could have. He never accumulated much in the way of power. He just devoted his life to knowing Christ and to growing like him and to telling other people about him. And I think, as far as it's possible to know this about another human being, that when he faces God, that his word from God will be well done. You lived your life wisely. I think that's what he's going to hear. Now, I don't mean to be melodramatic about this, but I think there is a greater danger in our society of avoiding or denying ultimate reality. So I want to ask you, if tonight was your night, if this was the day that your soul was going to be demanded of you, which it will one day, if God were going to write a single word to summarize your life, what would it be? Because, friends, you don't want to get to that point and realize that you've wasted your life on stuff that doesn't matter. So just remember the guy in Jesus' story. Remember that things will not settle down. Remember that more will never be enough. Remember that God has sent his Son, who lived and taught and died for the forgiveness of our sins, and was resurrected to be the one gift that will last forever. Let's stand for closing prayer.
And as the congregation stands there, we'll transition back into the Focus on the Family studios and tell you that that was Pastor John Ortberg with a very important message that he delivered to the folks at Willow Creek Community Church just outside of Chicago. As I mentioned earlier, Pastor Ortberg is at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church in California now. And that was such a significant reminder in this message today. The important things in life tend to get pushed aside by our busy pace and our misplaced priorities. Julie, Dr. Dobson has talked often about the busyness of life and how that is such a detrimental thing to families and to our own personal well-being. In Bringing Up Boys, he wrote a story about these caterpillars that that marched around and around and around in circles, and they all just fell over, dying of starvation when there was food just a few inches away from them. But they were so locked into what was going on and into following the caterpillar in front of them that this circle of caterpillars just died. I mean, in a sense, that metaphor is what's happening to so many families.
And Dr. Dobson used that metaphor to describe what he sees moms doing. And I can identify with that. It's so easy to look at what the mom next door is doing. And, if she's getting her kids in this mommy and me class, and I've got to do it too. And it goes on and on and on and on until you really get to the point where you realize my relationships are starving. Mm-hmm. I'm giving my kids all the things, and I have all the things, but the most important thing, that connection between each other and between us and God, has faded away without us even realizing it.
Well, I think a lot of men are very guilty of this, of course. We're chasing after providing for our family or that promotion, or we need the bigger house, and we fall prey to those things of the world that pull us away from that all-important connection with God. And if that's you, if you're feeling the pull and tug of this world, then please do make sure you pick up a CD of this presentation, or that you go online and listen again. Also, we'd of course recommend John Ortberg's book, which is directly related to this message, and that's called When the Game is Over, It All Goes Back in the Box. Look for that, and also an article from our Thriving Family magazine, which reflects one woman's effort to make Sundays special. You can find all of those materials at focusonthefamily.com/radio, or give us a call. Our toll-free number here in Colorado Springs is 800-232-6459. Or if you're in Canada, go to focusonthefamily.ca, or call our Vancouver office at 1-800-661-9800. Well, in addition to our longtime radio partners, we are, of course, online and available as well through satellite radio. So please let us know how you're listening to these radio programs. And if you could, please, as well, remember that Focus on the Family is a not-for-profit organization, and that we hear from hundreds, probably thousands of struggling people every day. And when you support Focus on the Family, you further our mission of helping families thrive and provide practical resources to those who need assistance. And your generous gift of $27 will help us send materials to someone who is in need and isn't quite sure where to turn. Let me encourage you to get in touch today, either by phone or online, and make a donation. Well, our program today was provided by Focus on the Family, and on behalf of Dr. Julie Slattery and the entire broadcast team here, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back tomorrow as we prepare for the National Day of Prayer coming up in just a couple of days, as we once again turn our hearts toward home.